Welcome to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass with Brett Henderson, founder of Strategic Wealth Endeavor. We've created a community of veteran entrepreneurs just like you who are ready to help you succeed. Our podcast provides expert advice and resources so you can overcome any obstacle in your way. With the help of Brett and veteran guest experts, you can build a battle-ready business mindset to take your company to the next level. Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to part two of Brett Henderson's conversation with Kenny Bass, executive director and co-founder of the Battle Buddy Foundation. In part one, we learned about Kenny's experience as a Marine in Iraq, his injuries from an IED, and the path that eventually led him to Atlas, his service dog. On this episode, we learn more about the foundation. Now, it has several related missions that include raising awareness of PTSD, TBI, and the disturbingly high rate of veteran suicide. But it also focuses on service dogs and getting vets their own life-saving canine buddies. So, Brett, over to you and Kenny. Keep going.
Well, thanks, Patrice. Appreciate that. Good morning, Kenny. How you doing, brother?
Awesome. Awesome. Great to be here.
Yeah, so this is take two, right? So we tried to do this last week, and just life happens. Let's chat about that. So you had, what was your challenge on Friday?
Air conditioning. Yeah. Stuff at the house, of course, with the heat the way it is, you know, the air conditioning was on the fritz, and I was trying to deal with that. And I was thinking, you know, having the rest of our meeting in the midst of that sweating probably wouldn't do so well for the video here. So
yeah, I agree. And I had COVID, so I was feeling a little off. It was a summer cold, and then I just got whacked with a 2x4. And so this is, I guess, my second or third time with COVID. And luckily, this is more mild. Today is now Monday. Friday was definitely not fun. Wednesday, Thursday last week literally just felt like a summer cold. But then that one day was that half morning, the aches, the cough, the phlegm, the headache, the fog was all there again. Like, I remember this feeling. But Saturday was much better. Yesterday was 99%. Even this morning, went out PT'd, did probably 3 miles and 10 hill sprints. So feel good. But what does that show? Life happens, right? It's not perfect. So this whole podcast is about just reality and being real and the struggles we have. And it's not perfect. And every day doesn't go as planned, right? And that's okay. And that's the main thing I want anyone listening to this is that life happens, things happen. You have a goal, but you didn't never stop. You just make it happen. So what do? You had your AC out. I had COVID. We just shifted. So here it's Monday. We're making it happen. So I appreciate that. And I think last week, our last call was awesome. Definitely learned a lot more about you than I even knew before last 4 years working together. So that was pretty cool. But let's jump into more you and the foundation. So if and when someone's listening, they really understand what we're supporting or what they'd be supporting if they support you or I, or what that means. So first things first, it's not about you, it's about Atlas, right? So let's talk about Atlas. So how did you find Atlas, or how did Atlas find you, or how did you guys find each other?
So I don't remember exactly everything we covered last week, but you know, as I mentioned, you know, I was in from 2000, 2004 active duty in Iraq in 03, you know, wounded during the invasion. I got out in 2004, got into the VA, you know, after kind of hitting rock bottom, trying to do things my own way, you know, like a lot of Marines, at least in the beginning, without a lot of support and education, you know, I got into the bottom of the bottle. You know, I was in the bar all the time, you know, things like that. And needless to say, that didn't end well. And so, you know, I ended up getting into the VA. I quit drinking. You know, my full-time job was basically, you know, going to counseling, you know, going to all my, you know, different appointments I had each week. So I was in the VA 4 and 5 times a week, basically for years. So this went on till probably about 2012. So you fast forward 8 years or so after I got out, and I went from taking 10 milligrams of Paxil, which is like, you know, a serotonin SRI, one of those serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So just a basic, you know, mood elevating medication, but right. 10 milligrams of that 3 times a day back in 04 when I was still active duty. And then you fast forward to, I'd say somewhere around 2010, I think they added Seroquel, 800 milligrams of Seroquel 3 times a day, which one of those is enough to put a much bigger man than me down for hours and hours. I took that for about 2-3 days and was slurring my speech. I was like drooling. People around me were like asking what sort of illicit drugs I was taking and if
right.
I could help, just to learn that, no, I'm taking exactly what I'm supposed to. The doctor prescribed this. But, you know, those Seroquel actually became pills 30 to 33. So I went from taking 3 pills a day to 33 pills a day over that, you know, 6, 8, 10 year, you know, time frame. And I can tell you this, you know, I'd struggle with suicidal thoughts. I had severe depression, you know, and obviously that's what a lot of the medications were supposed to help with. But, you know, the reality is, yeah, I wouldn't have like maybe extreme swings of anger or, you know, really, really down swings of depression, but I was just kind of like a zombie. I just kind of felt dead inside when I was fully medicated. And so for me, I had to find a better way. And the Seroquel was kind of that straw that broke the camel's back. That's where I'm like, you know, something's got to change. And so I went to the VA, was seeing all my doctors and stuff, and started kind of getting off those medications, which of course you can't do right away. It takes a couple years. But to get to your question about Atlas, all sure. that to say, my VA doctor, a great guy, he was actually a mental health doc in the Air Force in Iraq, around the time I was. So great guy to connect with, you know, in the respect of,
he got it.
Yeah. You don't have to describe 90%,
right.
you know?
Right.
So
exactly.
Anyhow, he was a great guy, you know, I credit him with a lot, you know, as far as my recovery and kind of getting to where I am. But, you know, he looked at me one day and he's like, Kenny, you know, what do you think about a service dog? You know, I think a service dog would be great for you. You know, and I had dogs as a kid. You know, I know how awesome a relationship with a dog that has little to no training and chews up treats all the time can be. You know, so I thought, wow, you know, a well-trained dog like this could be something. And so he wrote me a prescription, you know, and said, you know, I think he gave me a business card of like a local trainer he knew personally and kind of told me good luck. You know, the VA doesn't pay for it. You know, the VA didn't really have any professional or whatever type of relationships with service dog entities. I was on my own. So just like anybody else, you know, I got online and started Googling it. Looking into organizations, you know, trying to find an organization that, you know, I could get a service dog from. Right. So back then, you know, I spent probably a month doing research and, you know, basically came to the conclusion I was looking at anywhere between $10,000 to $60,000 that I was going to have to come up with to get a service dog. You know, at the time I was on disability, you know, through the VA, 100% disabled, you know, Social Security and stuff, 2 kids, you know, and a wife, you know, and all that. And it was one of those where I'm like 10, 60,000. Yeah, I can't afford that. Like maybe a right. service dog isn't for me. So lucky for me, I had a younger brother who was pretty computer savvy. And this was, I think, late 2011. You know, the brain injury kind of messes with some of that sometimes. So I'm not totally sure. But he created one of those Indiegogo campaigns. You know, it was before everybody was doing GoFundMe for kind of everything. And I think we raised like $3,500. We didn't know any better. We just launched it, you know, and, you know, people found out about it while it was live. But, you know, I think we raised like $3,500 or something like that. I was awesome. I was able to make a down payment on Atlas, you know, to actually back up. I had, of course, done my research. You know, I found this organization that I got Atlas from. And, you know, from everything I could read, it seemed, you know, on paper, I was like, wow, you know, they're using world-class German Shepherds. You know, I knew that the dogs had been in training for, you know, nearly 2 years at that point. I think maybe 18 months. The founder or the creator, or the main trainer was a Vietnam era veteran who had like a psychology, sociology background, you know, since then. So I'm like, oh, you know, these guys will get it. So I raised that initial money. I went out and met him and got Atlas and brought him home. I didn't know that Atlas was the first service dog that they had ever placed. I didn't know he was one of two that they would place before they ultimately closed their doors. I didn't know that, you know, every few months, if, you know, it got to be a little while before I made a payment, I'd get these emails talking about how they might have to pick him back up and do some retraining or, you know, things like that. And it was just, you know, throughout my experience, not just with the organization that I got him from, I mean, they have great hearts, you know, they were coming from the right place, but it's a very difficult industry, you know, and mm-hmm. even training service dogs is a heavy, heavy responsibility. But I don't think a lot of people think about. They think, oh, we'll just grab a rescue dog, give, you know, match him with the trainer for a few weeks and let's get him with veterans. You know, you're saving 2 lives. That's kind of how a lot of organizations work, you know, which I understand. You know, I mean, I've had rescue dogs. I love rescues. You know, they're great, you know, beautiful lives that you're able to save, you know. But I think the thing that a lot of people don't think about is when you're talking service dogs, specifically for individuals that are suicidal, say veterans with PTSD, TBI, if you give a veteran, like if you take a rescue that you have no idea their health history, their genetic background, you know, their likelihood, you know, for developing, you know, serious health issues down the line, and you spend a year, 2 years, 6 months, you know, and some of these, you know, other cases, but you spend that time training the dog to match him with a veteran, and you have no idea their health history. You get a couple years into it, and now that dog has some sort of severe health issue that, you know, stops them from continuing their work as a service dog, or worst case, they end up being put down. I can tell you from personal experience from other veterans I've known that were in this situation, that they are not in a good place. They're actually worse than they were before they ever got the service dog.
Right.
And it's like this weird oversight in the service dog industry where organizations are like, let's just pump as many rescues as we can through these training programs, give them to all these suicidal veterans, and, you know, talk about how many hundreds of, you know, service dog teams we've matched.
Yeah, that's a good segue. Sorry, I don't have to jump in. I know you can go and you're in the zone, which is awesome. And I flow and you flow, and being verbal thinkers is not a bad thing, especially when you're podcasting, right? So that's a good thing. But I just want to keep us on track at the same time. Let me ask a clarifying question first, because I didn't know, and maybe not everyone listening knows. PTSD, everyone's heard of, post-traumatic stress disorder. But TBI, what is TBI before we continue? Because some of our listeners may not understand what TBI is or what that means.
Yeah, that's a great question. I throw that around a lot just because it's pretty common, you know, around my household and around my family and friends. But yeah, TBI, traumatic brain injury. So, you know, back in 2003, I was doing counter-ambush patrols, Marine Corps infantry. The idea was to go out and drive slowly so the enemy that was wanting to ambush, you know, soft targets would see us instead, ambush us, and then we could either capture or kill them. So it was one of those missions where we were out driving, you know, waiting for the enemy to find us. They had set up an IED, so improvised explosive device. It was five of these guys daisy chained together, set up. And once we drove past, you know, it was right next to our right front tire, they set it off. And so that blast wave, you know, I guess it's roughly about 65 pounds per square inch as that wave passes through your body. When it goes to your brain, obviously that can create some, you know, long-term damage. So, you know, I know there's still lots of studies being done on it. My understanding years ago was that that blast wave can actually sometimes create small air pockets, little bubbles in your brain. It could be a couple hours, couple days, couple weeks, couple years, decades before those air bubbles burst. But when they do, it creates like a dead space in your brain. So needless to say, if that's true, I'm pretty sure I had a bunch of air bubbles wherever my memory is supposed to be. And, we jokingly refer to me sometimes as a 24-hour Kenny, because usually by the next day, I've kind of forgot 90% of whatever the details were from the day before. But so traumatic brain injury.
Thanks for clarifying, man. That probably helps a couple of our listeners out. I feel like I have that probably every day too, but that just my brain is normally empty most of the time. So I don't really think it ever happened though.
Being an officer and now you're old, you know.
Exactly. It's called life.
Yeah.
So let me ask you another question then. So going back to, you're talking about service dogs and different backgrounds, where they come from, or the good, the bad, the ugly. How should a service dog be trained? What is the right way, in your experience, what you've seen? A dog like Atlas is going to go to a veteran with PTSD. How should that dog be trained? Talk about that.
So I would love to I'd love to just launch into it and tell you exactly what I believe it takes to be, you know, to train up and place, you know, a proper service dog. But I should preface it by saying that if you were to stick 100 dog trainers in a room and ask them the same question, you'd probably have 110 answers. You know, the reality is, I mean, a lot of trainers see things different, but I think there's a few things that are kind of hard to dispute, and maybe I'll just kind of bring those up. You know, first of all, I mean, when you're talking a service dog, the reality is if you're talking about training a service dog in a few months or under a year, it's just ridiculous. You know, the truth is a majority of the established service dog entities, including guide dog organizations around the country, they work with the dogs from puppies, you know, that 12 weeks old or so, you know, once they're kind of weaned off. I mean, right away, you're doing different exposure, you know, and things like that. from there, puppies, dogs have different fear periods, right? So the first time is right about 12 weeks old, and you have to work the dog through that. They might develop a fear of stairs or something like that that you just didn't see coming. Obviously, that doesn't work for service dogs. And so there's, you know, different things. That may not have been the best example, but you also have that again at sexual maturity with dogs. And so with German Shepherds, that might be closer to 18 months, you know, with some Labs, it might be 12, 14 months. I mean, obviously this is, you know, round numbers here. I don't want trainers, you know, eating me up later, but they hit a second fear period during that, you know, during sexual maturity. And so again, a dog at 18. So for example, we had a service dog a few years ago that was just killing it. You know, I was looking forward to, you know, getting her matched with a high energy veteran just because she was just wonderful. She was killing all of her stuff. She did wonderful in public. But at, I think it was like 14, 15 months, she during that fear period, she developed out of nowhere a fear of like the open stairs where you could see through them. And this dog was amazing outside of that. But she ultimately, I mean, I had multiple trainers focused on her for months, just trying to get her through that. And ultimately she couldn't. And we had to wash her out as a service dog. We couldn't, you know, knowingly place her, you know, like that. And when she wasn't 100%. So when you're training dogs for 6 months, you know, from say 8 months to 14 months, and then place them as a fully fledged service dog, the reality is you're doing these veterans a disservice, and you're doing the service dog community a disservice, because, you know, it'd be like selling an incomplete car,
right?
You know, and being like, oh, you finished. You know, that's not how this works.
That's how it's done right now, unfortunately, with a lot of vehicles, but we can digress another time.
That's how a lot of it's done in the service dog community. I mean, you've got a lot of entities that are like, you know, the funny thing is let me continue. So where they'll take in, they match a partially trained dog with the veteran, and they're like, well, hey, the veteran's going to continue the training, you know, that'll give the veteran some self-esteem and all that. And honestly, I thought the same thing when we first started Battle Buddy. I was like, oh, this will be great. We'll bring veterans in, we'll match them with puppies, we'll have trainers kind of support them. But then the veteran in the end is going to be able to be proud and be like, I did that, you know, and they're going to have this new mission, this new purpose. And honestly, that sounds great on paper. But you quickly realize that individuals, veterans specifically, you know, because obviously that's what we work with, that are so disabled that they need a service dog to live day-to-day life, probably don't have the capacity to train a service animal. You know, I mean, even the fact that we think just anybody can train a dog to be a service animal, like that's a very difficult job, you know, training service dogs, you know, and I mean, it's a very skilled thing. So, you know, it's one of those where it's kind of like you've got a lot of organizations out there that were founded by people with incredible intentions, but little to no knowledge about either one, what it's like to be a veteran, or two, what it's like to be a veteran going through the process of obtaining a service dog. So, you know, I don't want to kind of harp too much on what's wrong with the community. I hate being negative. You know, it never really gets you anywhere.
Right.
So to kind of transition, you know, I mean, those are a lot of like hard lessons I learned, you know, through my experience of obtaining a service dog. And then, you know, the follow-up of saying, hey, we're going to start an organization that's doing it right. And then everything I kind of learned on the way of that journey.
So what do you see then it does take? Is it 18 months? Is it 36? Is it dog dependent? Is it veteran dependent? Is it a mix of those things?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of the last two. You know, it's dog dependent and veteran dependent. You know, I mean, if you're trying to do a one size fits all, you know, obviously you're gonna miss the mark in different areas. So, you know, so as far as like say the dogs go,
yes.
You know, we're not breed specific. So we have dogs of all different, you know, types of breeds. Just because obviously for the veterans, there's different needs. For example, we had one veteran in our program who is a Navy SEAL. He was shot 7 times with an RPK machine gun in Afghanistan, one or two in the face, among, you know, multiple other places. But his lifestyle is one where he still runs 10 miles a day. You know, he's out there doing speaking gigs and signing books, you know, and doing all this kind of stuff.
Right.
The dog for him, he's going to need a high energy dog that can keep up with him. He doesn't want a dog like Atlas. I need a lazy dog that just chills around the house with him and doesn't, you know, try and run me to death. So, but for him, he was going to need an entirely different kind of dog. So it actually took us 2 years to find the right dog to even start with. And then another 2 years to train the right dog to meet his specific needs. Now, on the other hand, one of our other veterans is a Vietnam era doc or medic. And, you know, obviously he's much older. He was in the, you know, beginning stages of dementia, among other issues. And so he needed a much more relaxed dog, one that's going to be almost more of a lap dog when he's not doing service dog work out in public. So, you know, I mean, they're very different needs. So in the Navy SEAL, he got a Belgian Malinois, you know, German Shepherd breed, you know, mix, you know, the older, you know, Navy medic, or I'm sorry, Vietnam era medic. He had say a Portuguese water dog, which is about $40 or $40, 40 pounds. And, you know, kind of curly haired, super calm, you know, cuddly dog. But so it's very much an our approach is very much individualistic, you know, based on the individual veteran's needs and then the dog's strengths and trying to match those appropriately.
So it's pretty customized then. It's definitely not a checklist you just go. It's more of an art than or a combination of art and science at the same time.
Our focus is genuinely on, you know, that long-term and tangible change in these veterans' lives. You know, we're not looking at trying to pump out 100 dogs a year so we can go and run to all the donors and be like, look at what we did, knowing on the inside that half of that's probably not even going to be very beneficial to these veterans, you know? So, you know, our focus is, you know, trying to set them up for success in the long term. Absolutely.
Okay. What is this? I know every veteran's specific, every dog is matched and every situation is customized, but what does it generally cost for the training to find the dog, to train the dog, to match the dog, and then supervise a dog with the veteran after he's been placed? What does that generally cost?
So our general cost is anywhere from about $30,000 to $60,000. And then, so to kind of, you know, give you some general overview there, for us, we have dogs in training. We usually get them, you know, as young as possible, you know, 12, 14 weeks. We usually go and take our pick of the litter. The way that works is, so we have a fairly large social media presence. You know, we've got a large following on Facebook, for example, facebook.com/battlebuddy. Of course, my service dog, Atlas of Wonder Dog, has got a pretty decent presence as well. And through that, you know, we get a lot of breeders around the country that'll get a hold of us and say, hey, we'd love to support you. We'd love to donate a dog. You know, how can we do that? Of course, that's great awesome. For the breeder because yeah. You know, it's a tax write-off. You know, if they produce service dogs, they're able to go afterwards and be like, hey, our lines are service dog quality dogs. So it's great for them. And it's great for us because we don't have any cost involved as far as obtaining dogs, you know, to start, you know, to bring into the program. So
right.
It's a win-win all the way around.
That sounds definitely a win-win.
Yeah. And so we require pick of the litter. You know, we'll go out a lot of times, best case, we'll go out and evaluate the dogs at 6 weeks. And then again, you know, at 11 and 12 weeks right before we take them and bring them into the program. They could train anywhere from probably 18 months to where I've got one shepherd that's right at the 3-year mark and in training still, which, you know, can get very expensive, you know, and obviously there's kind of a fine line on how far you go because you don't want to eat too much into the working life of the dog and then not have very long, you know, to actually be fulfilling their purpose. So
30 to 60,000 is a kind of range for the cost of a dog to get them trained and placed and then supervised after.
Yeah. So that's even something else that definitely sets us apart a little bit is, you know, we have a lifelong commitment with the veterans, veteran and service dog team. So, you know, the whole idea, the one thing I didn't understand is that, you know, when you join the military, you know, the idea is, hey, if you go over and you serve and you're injured, when you come home, we'll take care of you, you know, and that's where the VA and, you know, a lot of those things step in. I couldn't understand for the life of me how they were willing to give me thousands of dollars worth of pills every year, but not cover this whole service dog thing, you know,
right.
Get me clean off all those medications and get me out there living life again in a much more healthy kind of, you know, balanced manner. But, so, you know, when we started the Battle Buddy Foundation, it was one of those ideas where there can't be major impact, you know, major costs. Like that was a big concern for me. Like, can I even afford a service dog, you know, let alone if I get one, can I, you know, afford the upkeep and everything that goes along with it. So, at the Battle Buddy Foundation, you know, that is one thing that, you know, we definitively cover. I mean, everything from, you know, the service dog equipment, whether it's special leashes or vests, you know, things like that, right. To even after they're placed, sometimes the dogs are going to need retraining, you know, to keep them, you know, to keep them crisp and sharp, you know, and doing their job properly. So maybe there's travel involved, you know, and of course that can get expensive with gas prices or hotel fees, you know, things like that. So that's something that, you know, we always cover. Ideally, we'll even send the trainer to wherever the veteran is. So now the veteran's not training with their dog in a strange Kroger. They're doing it at the Kroger they go to all the time, you know?
Right. Right.
So, you know, even whether it's vet bills, you know, there's a few veterans in the program where we provide dog food each month. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those where it can add up. But, you know, when you're talking about not just changing a veteran's life, ideally saving their lives, you know, obviously if we're talking, you know, vets that are thinking about suicide and things like that. But, you know, I think one of my favorite things about it is, you know, for me, I think one of the hardest things when I was struggling was knowing that my kids are there. You know, I've got my kids and, you know, I hated the fact that that wasn't the catalyst for me to, you know, find this positive change. You know, it did take, you know, bringing Atlas into my life and finding kind of a new mission through Battle Buddy. But, you know, the beauty of what we're talking about with these service dogs is we're not just taking vets and sending them away for a weekend. Like, hey, here's a great weekend away, you know, enjoy it with the family. We cover it for you. But then the vet goes home and that next week, they're still behind on bills. You know, they've still got the same issues that they had before. You know, we're talking about creating some real change in their lives for the long term. And the beauty of it is when you affect that veteran in a positive way like that, it's not just me that, you know, benefits, it's my children, you know. So you're talking generational change. I mean, if you look at the path I was on where I was suicidal, I was severely depressed for years, you know, I'd have been, to be honest, I'd be surprised if, you know, if I didn't have, Atlas, you know, if I had never found him, you know, and had that big change in my life, now, I don't know that I would have survived all this. You know, I'd likely would have became one of the 22 a day, you know, that take their own lives.
I'm glad to hear. So with that, how many, putting things in perspective, how many dogs are you guys actually able, or how many veterans are you actually able to help on an annual basis? Is it two? Is it 200? What's a number so someone can get an idea of really where you guys are and how much help you can provide at this stage with the size of your organization?
So I think at our peak, we had somewhere between 15 and 18 dogs in training at any given time. Since then, I think currently we're somewhere around 6 or 7 dogs in training right now that are in, you know, different phases of that, you know, anywhere from like the one I said that was at 3 years. You know, at the end, she's getting ready to be placed. We're getting ready to match her with another Vietnam era veteran, actually. But because of COVID, you know, things have drastically drawn down, you know, that 2-3 year gap for us, almost all of our funding comes from doing events, fundraising events, you know, and then essentially donations, you know, from private individuals or, you know, different companies and things like that. But so not being able to do a lot of those public events and things like that, we've had, you know, much, much less financial support, you know, the last couple of years. So it's good that, you know, things are opening back up. Obviously being on here with you is a wonderful way to kind of get the word out there and, you know, spread the message of what we're doing and ideally gain some more, you know, financial support moving forward. So
yeah,
and up those numbers.
And with that, I think you shared some amazing news. Are you allowed to talk about that news here possibly?
When will this podcast be live?
In a couple of weeks. So before the fall. So July or August.
I don't know if that'll be.
So let's just say there's some good notoriety coming, good publicity coming, right? Your organization is going to be noticed. Is that fair?
Yeah. So I won't say what channel or show. But we'll be doing some filming in the next 2 weeks that'll be for a Veterans Day special. So on Veterans Day, if you're watching probably about 8 p.m., there's a special channel that, you know, kind of focuses on that stuff. And Atlas and I and the Battle Buddy Foundation, they'll be, you know, telling a little bit of our story on there and kind of thanking us for our continuation of, you know, what we're doing. So,
right. So some much. It's a good teaser. So we'll go with that. But if someone wanted to listen or someone listened to this, and they want to help directly, just want to make a donation, they want to sponsor you. How do they do that? How do they reach out? How would they make just a simple donation?
So the name of the organization is the Battle Buddy Foundation. And our website is tbbf.org. So tango bravo foxtrot.org.
Honestly, awesome. The Battle Buddy Foundation.org. Yep. So someone could donate directly there. And I'll just, if I could shift back to myself momentarily, when we were originally speaking, just who I am, there's the aspect of the, hey, give me a handout. Just in myself personally, I hate handouts. I hate it. I hate the idea of just give me stuff or, oh, woe is me or feel bad for me. Earn it, right? Earn it. And so when we were originally speaking, what I wanted to do with my own business is as I grow the brand and bring in new clients, make a donation to you because of we've generated revenue. right? A piece of our business we're donating to you that we've earned, that we've done work for. So we're not just giving it to you because you're a nice, handsome guy. Well, you're definitely not handsome, so I can't go with that. But luckily there's no video here, right? But it's because we're doing work. And I'm much more apt to do work with somewhere, have a business. If another veteran-owned organization engages us or works with us, hey, I'm happy to take a piece of that revenue that's been earned,
yep,
and give that to you as a donation because you're doing work. I'm doing work. You're doing work. So it's not just a gift, a handout, a gimme, which I just hate that feeling. I don't want anyone just to give me stuff. Everything I have in life, I've worked for, I've earned. And so a handout for me just doesn't feel good, doesn't work with my stomach. So, but doing work and making a donation after doing work as a result of positive effort and positive action, positive momentum, mm-hmm, is for me why I support you. And so we have good days and bad days, right? And there'll be good months and bad months. You know that. You see, when I make a bigger donation, you know, things are going well. Smaller, hey, peaks and troughs. That's how it works, right? Yeah. So that's how I do it. So anyone can do that too. So you can make maybe an ongoing, if someone wanted to, they could set up an ongoing commitment. So if they're doing well in business and they can share that success with you, that I think makes them feel good, makes you feel good. It makes me feel good. So that's how I do it. So I just wanted to share a little bit about that too.
I loved your approach to it. Even it wasn't like, you know, hey, let me reach out to my network through my business and all those associates and see who's willing to donate. It was, let me set up a program that's, hey, no cost to these people. But if you just look at my business, you know, if you work with me from that, well, you were going to pay me anyway. I'm just that same money. I'm going to do something good with it. And you can be a part of that. And I mean, I think that's great because not only are your potential clients getting, you know, being able to be a part of something great like this just by working with you, but obviously they get, you know, the benefits of everything you have to offer them as well. So, you know, it's definitely a win-win all the way around. And, you know, I just thought that was, I thought that was a great approach.
I appreciate that, brother. Thanks so much. So one more last thing to shift back to Atlas, because it really isn't about you or me. How old is Atlas, and how long is the working life on average of a service dog?
Every time everybody's asked me that question over the years, my answer is always 7 to 10 years is generally that working life. Atlas is now 11. So we're kind of getting close to that, you know, getting close to that time frame on Atlas. My goal has always been to, in recent years, my goal has been to breed Atlas. I'd have to work out the details with that from who I got him from, you know, as far as having rights to do that and things like that. But Atlas Junior is really kind of the only way I see to go as far as a successor here. So hopefully I'm able to get all that worked out, you know, and ideally I'll have some beautiful little fluff balls, you know, a pile of them running around here that look a lot like Atlas, just smaller and fluffier. But yeah, the idea is to get Atlas Junior and before Atlas retires, have Atlas Junior kind of working next to him. Sometimes when you have successor dogs like that, you'll work them for say 6 months or so, just on either side of him. You got your old dog here and you got, you know, your little fluffy service dog in training there, and they'll actually pick up cues from the older dogs. So it's a pretty cool process. I'm hoping to be able to start that here soon. So
awesome, man. Well, this has been great. So this was supposed to be a one episode podcast, and obviously two, we could probably turn it into three. So this is good. I'm sure you'll come back in the next year or so as this progresses and morphs and evolves and see what direction this goes. But I'm glad to have met you. I'm glad I can help give back to you. I still wear my band every day from the loss of my friend, and seeing you succeed helps me heal with the loss of my friend. So every time I see you, seeing you in action doing makes me heal from the loss of my friend who's no longer here, because he can't do that anymore, right? So hopefully anyone listening to this, whether you have PTSD, TBI or not, you just care. You're just a human being, that you don't have to be a veteran, just someone who likes the idea, likes the concept and care. I think it, I don't care, $5, no bucks, it's just sharing the word that it's out there, I think is beneficial. And so you are my first guest on this podcast. And so that's kind of cool for us. And I want to thank you for that. And you might not even know this because we're just launching it. Do you know the mantra of my firm? I guess, let me just tell the mantra of my firm. So something we went through, and it's on one of the first episodes of the podcast, is like, what is our mantra? What should we do? And when you and I were in, we had iron sights, right? We had iron sights, a M16A2, We didn't have the M4 or anything like that. It was old iron sights, and you're on the rifle range, 500 yards prone, and you're hitting the center mass, hopefully. And so we had a story. I'm not going to go through the whole thing again, but we went out, we were camping, and my girlfriend and I ran into a bunch of buds in training, SEALs in training. They had an arsenal with them, and we were out in the middle of the desert. And so let's go shooting. And they had these red dots. Like, what are these red dots? And I had no idea how easy it was to shoot with a red dot versus iron sights. Yeah. So the mantra of our firm is, hey, trade in your old iron sights and give your wealth a red dot. That's what we're doing. So what I actually did, I reached out to Sig Sauer because I have an AR-15 and it comes with a Romeo 5, and I chatted with Sig Sauer. So I can't formally say they are endorsing or supporting, but they took care of me. So I'm going to be sending you a Romeo 5 red dot, brother. So that's just my little token of thanks for you being on the show. Romeo 5. It's pretty cool because that's everything we're doing. Just keeping it laser target on site, helping out, doing good. It's what we're about, brother. So I just want to say thanks for being our first guest.
That's incredible. I'm really excited. I've got a couple rifles upstairs, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I know where I gotta get home for that.
Awesome, so, man. Well, thanks so much. Well, thanks again for being on. Patrice, take over. You're the boss here, actually. I just sit here and along for the ride.
No, I'm the one along here for the ride. Fantastic. Guys, fantastic. But let's revisit one more time. Brett, how can they reach you? And Kenny, how can listeners reach you?
Sure. So our website again is SWE for Strategic Wealth Endeavor. And 9090 represents the amount of income we want you to have for life, so you never run out of money. Running out of money is a bad thing, so don't run out of money. So SWE90.com. I'm Brett at SWE90.com. Our phone number, if you want to chat, 310-491-7045. Again, 310-491-7045. Kenny, how can they reach you again, sir?
So Tango Bravo Bravo Foxtrot.org. TBPF.org is the Battle Buddy Foundation's website. If not, if you're on Facebook, just look up Battle Buddy. Or you can, find me and Atlas at KennyBass.com.
All right, gentlemen. Fantastic, fantastic show. And again, this is part two. If you didn't hear part one, go back and listen. You'll love it.
Thanks.
All right. Follow and subscribe to this podcast for more information on sources of support for veterans too, and for stories about fellow vets. Please share with friends and colleagues also, because they can reach out to others.
Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass podcast. Don't forget to click the follow button to become notified when new episodes become available. Securities offered through IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through IFP Investors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, a registered investment advisor. IFP and Strategic Wealth Endeavor INC are not affiliated. The views expressed are that of the host and are for informational purposes only, and in no event should be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Neither IFP Investors LLC, IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, nor their affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. The information given herein is taken from sources that IFP Advisors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners,